Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. It started on Monday. A makeshift pipe bomb was delivered to the home of billionaire philanthropist and liberal donor George Soros. Since then, similar pipe bombs and padded manila envelopes have been found addressed to high-profile Democrats, including former President Barack Obama, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters. And on Wednesday, CNN was forced to evacuate its New York City headquarters after receiving a similar package addressed to former CIA Director John Brennan. None of the bombs have reached their targets, and no injuries have been reported. But one thing all the recipients have in common is that they've been frequent targets of President Donald Trump.
I think President Obama has been the most ignorant president in our history.
You can have the biggest story about Hillary Clinton. I mean, look at what she's getting away with, but let's see if she gets away with it. Let's see. Maxine, a seriously low IQ person.
No, I have no confidence in a guy like Brennan. I think he's a total lowlife.
On Wednesday afternoon at the White House, President Trump struck a different tone.
I just want to tell you that in these times, we have to unify. We have to come together and send one very clear, strong, unmistakable message that acts or threats of political violence of any kind have no place in the United States of America.
But by the evening, at a rally in Wisconsin, the president returned to his more familiar talking points.
The media also has a responsibility to set a civil tone and to stop the endless hostility and constant negative and oftentimes false attacks and stories. Have to do it. And by the way, do you see how nice I'm behaving tonight? This is like, have you ever seen this? We're all behaving very well, and hopefully we can keep it that way, right?
Quite frankly, it feels like a lot of Americans are not on their best behavior, and that political rancor is having a direct impact on our democracy. According to the Pew Research Center, there's a growing partisan gap between Democrats and Republicans on a range of important issues, and partisan animosity has more than doubled since 1994. To better understand this connection between politics, tribalism, and violence, we turn now to Jonathan Haidt, a social psychologist at the New York University Stern School of Business and author of The Righteous Mind: Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion.
The first thing to note is that there is a huge, long downward trend in violence of all sorts. And this should be the background to any discussion here. In writing my recent books, I've been looking back at the 1960s, and the amount of violence in 1968 is stunning and horrific compared to now. So things are really bad in terms of our cross-partisan hatred. But actually, so far, only a few people have died. And that's something we need to keep in mind. Things are better now than they were in the 60s.
And when we talk about comparing now to the 60s, I'm thinking about, for example, Heather Heyer, who died in Charlottesville as a result of, you know, being at one of these rallies. I'm thinking about just the fear of the potential for death. But you're saying, like, in terms of the actual numbers, we're doing better now than we were a couple decades ago.
That's right. So in terms of the things holding our democracy together, they are much weaker now. Our democracy, I think, is in more danger now than it was in the 1960s. But as passions ramp up, the restraints on violence, the general social consensus that violence is unacceptable, is so much stronger. I mean, the number of bombings, the beatings, the number of people who died in the 60s. And so, yes, Heather Heyer is the stunning horror of last year. And there have been a number of beatings and punchings from both sides. But not that many people have actually died. Now, that could change. The right is certainly very heavily armed. Antifa on the left does go around beating people. So the deaths could go up, but so far we're not there yet.
You've written a lot about this idea of tribalism. What are some American tribes?
There's a wonderful report that just came out that I think every American should read or read a summary of. It's called the Hidden Tribes Report. It was done by a group based in the UK, but they're studying this kind of polarization and the rise of populism all over. Let's bear in mind that this American problem is not unique to America. We are, many European countries are seeing some similar problems as well. And I think the way to think about this is that America used to have we used to have many different cross-cutting identities, and even our two parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, each had a liberal and a conservative wing to them. And one of the big changes that's very risky for our democracy is that from the beginning of the 1980s through the 1990s especially, the two main political parties purified so that all the people with a progressive mindset were in one party, the Democrats, and all the people with a conservative mindset were in the other. And so our two parties didn't used to be the most important tribes in the country. But by the 1990s, by Bill Clinton's first election, the electoral map had reached its present format. And the two parties have become among our most important tribes, such that now people really, really don't want their children to marry someone from the other tribe. They don't care as much about religion or race as they used to. And in the 60s, it was just the opposite.
Hmm. What kind of impact is that having on us? And how much is social media exacerbating that?
Yeah, that's really the place to go with this. In terms of the impact on us, a way to think about this is that human beings evolved for tribalism. There is no doubt that our minds were shaped by our long, long evolutionary history living in tribes that competed violently with neighboring tribes. And so you can see this, you know, we love to do tribalism so much that if you just watch college boys doing fraternity initiations, they mimic a lot of the processes that anthropologists know in traditional societies. So we're designed for tribalism, but it doesn't mean we have to live in tribal ways. And some societies can play up those tribal sentiments and some can play them down. The mid to late 20th century was really unique in that everything lined up to play down tribalism within the United States. Of course, there were still many tribal loyalties, but we had, for the only time in our history, as far as I know, we had a media environment that was truly centralizing. In the early days of the Republic, the media was extremely partisan and full of lies. And in the once we had radio and then TV and we had regulation of them, we had three centrist or center-left networks. So there were a lot of forces pulling us really to the center. There was a common enemy originally in the Nazis and Japan and then on to the Soviets. So in so many ways, things were lined up for about 50 or 60 years to have very low cross-partisan animosity. And then beginning in the 80s, one by one, those centralizing factors fell away and polarizing factors took their place. The media, as you say, is the most important one to look at, from cable TV through the internet and now social media.
How much does race factor into this? And the reason why I'm asking is because we're in a moment right now where our president has just called himself a nationalist. I think in this country we're seeing race, and, you know, yes, we're talking about Democrat and Republican, but race is something that we can't ignore. And I'm wondering, the decades that you've described were also decades in which people of color, American people of color, were making gains, social gains after many, many, many decades of attempting to do that. And so do you think that has played into more of the tribalism?
Yes, race is really complicated and important. It's woven through all of this. So first, on the optimistic side, the wonderful thing about a country like America is that it has long been based on an idea not on blood and soil, not on having a race or a religion. And there's a large-scale consensus in this country. The great majority of people do believe that if you come here, you can become an American, you join our culture, you work, you know, you share our reverence for the founding documents, you're an American. That's what most Americans believe. And the late 20th century was a time of huge progress, obviously from, you know, literal legal segregation with Jim Crow to enormous gains for all groups, including African Americans. So America is, you know, could do this really well and has been a beacon to the world. Now, when Trump calls himself a nationalist, that is a potentially dangerous turn. Usually people use the word patriotism. A patriot is one who loves one's country, not because it's the best in the world, but because it's your country. And when he identifies as a nationalist, he is linking, I think, to more European blood and soil nationalists. And some of the things he said have clearly been, not even dog whistles, have been fairly explicit about race and racism. So this is an alarming turn. I don't think it reflects a fact about America at large, but it does reflect something about one of the tribes, the furthest right of the seven tribes described in this report.
And Jonathan, you know, even yesterday, I was looking at Twitter after the bomb threats had come in, and you know, watching former colleagues at CNN leaving their offices, et cetera. And there were folks, even on the right, who were calling for the president to be a uniting figure, saying, you know, probably having a rally tonight isn't the best idea. You know, you should give a speech, you know, trying to unify people. My question to you is, we're in this downward spiral, as you've said. Is it, or could we stop this with a leader, a president, who is much more unifying? Is that really what we need right now?
Well, that is one, that is necessary but not sufficient. And to his credit, Trump, the one comment I saw, he did at least say something. He did have a sound clip that was the right thing to say. But yes, we will need a president who is a uniter, but these trends have been going on since the 1980s. There's about six or eight of them that I could list. Most of them are irreversible. So I think we can't be thinking that once Trump is out of office, maybe there will be a more moderate, uplifting president, someone who can perform really the spiritual duties of the role. Well, that's not going to be enough to save us, because these trends have been going on for a few decades. We need to think about, how do we reform our political systems that inspires more trust? How do we remove the increasing and paramount role of money? And in particular, we have to realize that we are all caught in a system that plays up our worst instincts now, and we all as individuals have to adapt to this. That is, when you hear a horrible story about somebody on the other side, you have to remember, yes, that's one person on the other side. That's not what they're all like. We're going to have to somehow find a way to adapt to a world in which outrages are forced down our throats every day, and we have to still somehow remember that we're citizens of one country, and that the great majority of our fellow citizens also love this country, are concerned about both racism and political correctness. That's one of the findings of the Hidden Tribes report. And we have to find a way to adapt and move forward together.
Jonathan Haidt is a social psychologist at the New York University Stern School of Business. Jonathan, thank you.
My pleasure.
How do you feel about people on the other side? How has that feeling changed?
My name is Royal. I'm calling from Superior, Wisconsin. I am a Trump supporter, and I wouldn't say I have contempt for the people on the opposite side of the aisle, because I think we all want the same thing. You know, we all want to be happy. We all want to have enough food and have power and clean water and everything. I just think that we want to get there down a different path.
This is Sandy from Auburn, Massachusetts. I am gravely disappointed, even fearful, depending on where people stand on the political spectrum. I've been significantly stressed since the 2016 election, as drastic polarities have been revealed and people have become encouraged to turn quiet prejudices into vocal and sometimes violent hatred.
Hi, this is John from Buffalo, and I try to make it a point to stay in touch with people on the other side. I have many friends who are on the other side, and on social media, I make it a point not to block or unfriend people who are from the other side, even though I will say it's gotten tougher since Trump was elected.
We want to hear from you. How do you feel about people on the other side of the political spectrum? Join the conversation on the Takeaways Facebook page or tell us on Twitter. We're at The Takeaways.